Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the show. It's an ensemble program with lots of good people involved. And among them, we have our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who's going to be talking later in the show to Dr. Julie Silver, a cancer survivor, an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School, and creator of the STAR program. She's going to talk about cancer prehabilitation and cancer rehabilitation. And that should be quite interesting indeed. And also Steve will be with us toward the end of the program discussing identity theft of the dead. Identity theft is one of the major crimes in America. It's the number one consumer crime. Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent, he's an attorney, he's an author, and he is one of the leading experts on identity theft and fraud in this country, so be sure to stick around for that. It's not a joke. Identity theft of the dead. Now, let's kick off the program with the host and star of the show, its founder and guiding light, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, a champion in the battle against ageism. Her name is Carol Marx. And now Carol will interview Shirley Knight, a two-time Academy Award nominee for Best Supporting Actress for her work in The Dark at the Top of the Stairs and Sweet Bird of Youth, three-time Golden Globe winner, and two-time Emmy winner. She's going to talk to Carol about her starring role in the movie Redwood Highway, now available on DVD. This part of the interview deals with the subject of how Shirley got into acting.
I want to ask you about the career that you passionately wanted to pursue when you were young, opera. So, you've got to tell this story. How did seeing an opera production in New York change your mind about going into opera because you were so firmly fixed on doing that?
Well, I had very little entertainment as a child in the sense that there was no television, and we were very far away from a cinema. I was raised in the middle of Kansas in a little teeny town of 13 houses and one school, one church, a granary where they took the train stop to pick up the wheat. It was very small. And our main entertainment was ourselves. We all played instruments in my family, and my sister and I sang at church every Sunday, and we sang at funerals and weddings and so on and so forth. And mainly, we listened to the opera every Saturday. And my mother had wanted to be an opera singer, and that hadn't worked out. And she had a lovely voice and played the piano. And we would listen to the opera. And I would sit, and when I was about eight, I started singing along with Roberta Peters, when she was singing an aria, because I'd heard them all so much. And everyone recognized that that was something that I was mad at, just crazy about and wanted to do. So when I was 11, my mom took me to a town about 20 miles away and gave me singing lessons. And that's all I ever wanted to do. And then I went to college at Wichita State University, and I studied music, and it was my dream. And I realized that I needed to have an acting class, and there were no acting classes at that time. This is 1956, and they didn't do acting classes at universities then. And I was working at a newspaper and as an assistant to the society editor, and they got magazines, and there was a magazine called Theater Arts Magazine that was sent to the paper, and I started reading it, and then I noticed that between my junior and senior year at university, I noticed that they had a class at Pasadena Playhouse for the summer. And it was 4 weeks, or 6 weeks, it was 6 weeks. And it was $200, and I took another job, made some more money, my dad gave me some money, and I got on the train and went to Pasadena, California, and took this acting class, and I was dreadful. I mean, I didn't know anything about acting. I'd seen only 3 movies as a child, so I was not versed in cinema really at all. And I think I had a kind of natural talent, because always when I sang, I always was very devoted to what the song was about. And so people thought I was good in these classes. And then at the end of it, we did a play, and an agent saw me and thought I was good and took me to meet his boss. And his boss was the main, absolutely main agent for women in Hollywood. He handled all the big stars, Elizabeth Taylor and Audrey Hepburn, Grace Kelly, you know, everybody. And so it was a natural fit. But he took one look at me, and his young assistant who had brought me in, and he said, "Why do we want her?"
Oh, that wasn't helpful. That wasn't helpful at all.
And the young man said, "Well, I think she has talent." And so Mr. Frings took me to Warner Brothers and to MGM, and they both offered me the standard 6-month contract. And if you did well during that 6 months, they would keep you, and so on and so forth. And I was just lucky because I chose Warner Brothers rather than MGM. He thought I should go to MGM, and I said, "No, I think I want to go to the other place. It seems a little more homey to me." And that was serendipitous because within the 6 months, I was put in a film called The Dark at the Top of the Stairs. I played a 15-year-old girl. I looked very young for my age, and I've always looked younger than I am. I was nominated for an Oscar, and that was that.
And there you went, and you've done so well, and you have really this amazing ability to play so many different types of roles. So how do you think that evolved? Was that just naturally the ability that you had?
Well, I think a lot of it was, and then there were things that were difficult for me, and I would work very hard. Once I started taking acting lessons, I continued for years, and I'm a member of the Actors Studio, and I do all sorts of things for them and teach there and all that. But once I decided that I was not going to continue with my music, I decided I had to be the best at this. Whatever it was I was going to do in life, I was going to be the best at this.
Shirley Knight, in conversation with Carol Marks, talking about how she got into acting and, of course, a very, very colorful acting career. Now, this is part one of a 2-part interview that we have for you, and Carol and Shirley will be back in just a moment here on A Touch of Gray with the second part of the conversation. If you're interested in Carol Marks and some of her adventures, not to mention some of the great interviews and programs we've done over the years on A Touch of Gray, please go to our website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. That's A Touch of Gray, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Coming up next, part two, Carol Marks, in conversation with Shirley Knight.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, "You are the picture of health"? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage, when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with The Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Coming up in just a few minutes on the program, we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who's also the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, which covers activity in the talk radio industry. He'll be telling us a bit about what's going on behind the scenes in the world of talk radio. Okay, let's get back to, as promised, part two of the conversation between the host of our program, Carol Marks, and award-winning actress Shirley Knight. In this part of the discussion, Carol talks to Shirley about Redwood Highway and the one-woman show she's currently working on.
I want to switch a bit and now get to the wonderful movie that you were in, Redwood Highway, that I watched on DVD and enjoy so much. And it's about a woman that you play, Marie. She's biologically an elder, but she's got the heart and spirit of a young woman, but she's unhappy with the life that she's leading in a retirement community. So how did you feel about playing Marie in the movie?
I absolutely loved it. I mean, for one thing, I as you probably know, I do a lot of theater, and in the theater, I only play leads because it would be really boring, you know, to play a supporting part. But often in the cinema, it really is okay because you go in and you do a small part. It doesn't really matter because you're gone. You know, you don't have to sit backstage for hours. And I mention this because when you get older, and I just turned 78, when you get older, you mostly play mothers and grandmothers, and you know, so you don't really have to lead in films, you know, like, for example, The Mom and As Good As It Gets and so on. And so when this came to me, and the two writers and director simply offered it to me, they sent it to me, not even through my agent, and I read it and I said, oh my goodness, this is a film. It's all about my character. I can't wait to do this and have a wonderful, complex role. And she certainly is complex, and I loved the journey that she takes. That because when the other thing that happens when you get older and your spouse dies, for example, which has happened to me, and you have a choice really, which is that you deal with it. You know that you have a choice. And you have to be very strong and keep yourself strong so that you don't feel sorry for yourself. and that you continue your life, because life is death as well, as we know. And I thought, this is a very good fit for me as well. I felt that it was a very good fit in terms of me playing that woman. I really understood her, and I grew to love her. In the beginning, I thought, well, she's a little self-pitying, you know.
Wanting to hike. The movie's all about her wanting to hike 80 miles up the Oregon coast to witness her granddaughter's wedding, and everybody thinks she's crazy. But, you know, it was inspiring. And why does she say that she wants to do it? I mean, most of us might think about it, but we wouldn't have the guts to do it.
I think it's part of what she has to do in order to move on. You know, because she goes, as you know, to the places where she went on her honeymoon with her husband and all of that. And I think that journey for her is a remarkable one, and her bravery at moments when she clearly is, things are really tough on that Redwood Highway. But I really enjoyed doing it, and it's been a pleasure to talk to people about it, and it's doing well, and so we like that very much.
And it's gotten rave reviews. And what was it like? It must have been a wonderful experience, too, a physical experience of having the pleasure of walking during the autumn on that magnificent Oregon landscape and seeing the water off the Pacific coast. You were lucky.
Oh, it was honestly one of the most beautiful places I've ever gone to do a film. That in New Zealand, I did a film in New Zealand, and it was so extraordinary just to be able to be in that landscape. I really had not been up that far up in Oregon. I'd sort of been to the top of California, and one realizes how extraordinarily beautiful that coast is with those mountains out in the water. It's just been, you look out in the water and there's mountains. It's extraordinary.
Oh, you made me want to go right now and see it all. But, and I enjoyed that beautiful scenery as well as all the other actors' performances, which were outstanding, as yours certainly was. So what was it like to work with the cast and crew of Redwood Highway? Was it fun? Was it dangerous? Was it exciting? Or was it all of the above?
You know, it was an extraordinary shoot. The best way I can explain it is sometimes you'll do a film and there's just trouble. It rains when you don't need it and you have to sit around for hours and days and so on and so forth. On Redwood Highway, and I swear this is true, everything we needed, we got. If we needed rain, it rained. We didn't have to manufacture rain. If we needed sunshine, we had sunshine. If we needed there not to be a lot of traffic, there was not a lot of traffic. It was just extraordinary. And it's difficult to make an independent film when you don't have tons of money, as you know. So the fact that we had the blessing of the incredible everything about Oregon. I can't say enough. And I was put up in a beautiful hotel in Ashland, so I got to go to the Ashland Shakespeare Festival several times, which was just amazing. It's just such an extraordinary place.
Well, you know, you had all these blessings, Shirley, when you were making the movie, and now Redwood Highway has had more blessings because it's won many film festival awards, and recently it won the Dove Family Approved Seal for ages 12 and plus, and I think that's great. And do you think that the film's multi-generational appeal is due, because this is what I loved about the film, the way older people and younger characters interact in the movie. I mean, I think that's such a plus.
Yes, yes. And there's so many lovely actors because it's kind of an amazing thing up there because you have the pick of all those wonderful actors that live in Ashland and work in the Shakespeare, almost all of our actors were from there, apart from Tom Skerritt, of course, but he lives in Portland, I believe. So he was close by, and that's why I think they were able to convince him that he should do it. He's lovely, isn't he?
Yes, and a great actor, too. And you are certainly a busy actress, so surely for all your fans, what interesting projects in the movies or the theater have you been or are you working on?
Well, I'm doing a lot of different kinds of things. I'm producing
Great.
A film that was written by my late husband, John Hopkins. We're going to be doing that within the year. And I'm also directing a play, and that's been a lot of fun. So I'm keeping busy. I'm also, for my sins, I'm also working on a one-woman show. And at the moment it's called The Girl from Kansas. I'm not sure what it's going to be called, but we're working very hard on it, so we'll see.
That's Shirley Knight in conversation with Carol Marks. And she's in the movie Redwood Highway, now available on DVD. Coming up later in the program, our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman will be talking about identity theft of the dead. He's an expert on identity theft and fraud. He has a new book coming out soon called Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall. Keep your eye open for that, and keep your ears open for his conversation coming up later in the program. Kevin Casey is next. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and this is the point in the program where we're joined by the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine. He's also a senior correspondent on our show. His name is Kevin Casey. Talkers Magazine's a trade publication in talk radio. And, you know, people think of talk radio as only news talk radio, such as the station we're on right now, and there's nothing wrong with that, but there's all kinds of talk out there, and even on news talk stations, they talk about popular culture, sports, entertainment, and in the entertainment industry, one of the icons of our culture, and certainly the baby boomers listening to this program all will know, what an important part of the fabric of our history James Garner, the actor, played, and he passed at the age of 86 this week.
Yeah, it was actually last weekend, Michael. He passed away, and you know, it's funny, people of different eras remember him for different things. Folks who are a little bit towards the upper end of the boomer years, they remember him for Maverick. Me being a little bit down on the scale there, I remember him primarily for the Rockford Files.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he had a bunch of great movie roles too after his TV career.
I loved him and Jack Lemmon in a movie that really didn't make much of an impression. It was called My Fellow Americans. And Jack Lemmon and James Garner played two ex-presidents who were hated rivals who had to join forces against the new president, played by Dan Aykroyd, an evil president. And it's just the greatest movie. If you ever have a chance, check it out, my fellow Americans. Had you ever heard of it?
I had not heard of it. Obviously, it didn't go too far.
It didn't go very far, but it was one of those, you know, a lot of movies don't go far these days that are pretty darn good. It's like, what happens to them? That's an industry in flux. But these two ex-presidents, Jack Lemmon and James Garner, right there, you can't go wrong. They wind up in the middle of the country, the current president's trying to have them killed, and they wind up in the middle of the country, stranded, without identity, without identification, and without money.
Oh, that's funny.
And they have, and people are going, you look like, no one would believe they were the presidents. They thought,
right.
People thought they were like impersonators, you know, impressionists. and they had to get back to Washington to save the country from this evil president. And of course, Dan Aykroyd is tremendous at any kind of role. You talk about an interesting bundle of chemistry and moods and characters and comedy and tragedy.
Sure.
He's quite an actor. But here's a quick one for you. You say you remember Rockford Files. Do you remember who wrote the song for Rockford, you know, the theme music for that?
That'd be Mike Post.
I can't believe you remembered that.
Yeah, he wrote so many of those great TV themes from the 70s and really even to the early 80s, too.
I had a great chance to meet him. He was on one of the shows I hosted, and it was just it was so cool talking to him. But, yeah, you know, there's a lot of great contemporary cultural intertwined, you know, from Maverick to the Rockford Files felt like forever, and yet those two were just one decade apart. But when we were kids, we thought that that was really a lot of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, James Garner is going to be missed. Great, great actor, great personality, and another piece of the culture of our lifetimes, as they say, is now part of the ages.
Yep.
All right, well, thank you very much, Kevin Casey. And folks, if you'd like to know more about what's going on in talk radio or music radio, Kevin Casey is the vice president and executive editor of two trade publications, free of charge. Just go to the Internet and go to either talkers.com or radioinfo.com. Radio Info is music radio. Talkers is talk radio. Thank you, Kevin Casey. I'm Michael Harrison, and we'll be joined by our senior correspondent, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire, next.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine,
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison, and now we're joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Weissman, in conversation with Dr. Julie Silver. She's a cancer survivor, an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School, and creator of the STAR program.
You call this program the STAR program?
That's right. It stands for Survivorship Training and Rehabilitation, and it's really a multidisciplinary team of clinicians that work in a hospital to provide rehabilitation services to cancer survivors.
Now, one of the things you talk about is even prehabilitation services. What's that?
Prehab is very interesting. In the past, people might have heard of pre-op preparation or pre-op counseling or nursing education at the time of diagnosis and things like that. And those are all a sort of prehab, but not really evidence-based prehab that is more about specific assessments to establish a baseline status for these patients. So, for example, do they have baseline psychological or physical problems?
Oh,
and then interventions that will help them before they ever have cancer treatment. So, for example, a woman that is just diagnosed with breast cancer might not be able to lift her arm very well overhead and might have rotator cuff impingement. And that's important to establish the diagnosis before treatment and treat it if possible so it doesn't get worse and become frozen shoulder.
You know, it's amazing as you're talking about this, I'm saying to myself, wow, this sounds like something should have been done a long time ago. Why wasn't it?
Prehabilitation actually has been around for decades.
And, oh, that's good.
We use it a lot in sort of this concept where it came out of, actually, which was getting people ready, especially men in the past, ready for the military. You know, sort of the idea of boot camp. Can you take someone who's going to have an upcoming stressor and get them physically and emotionally stronger to prepare for that upcoming stressor? And then we translated that, actually, into medical practice, and we started doing it, for example, with patients that are undergoing a total hip or a total knee replacement. We said before you have this elective surgery, we want to get you as strong and healthy as possible so you'll have the best outcome.
Now, you are a cancer survivor yourself, and was it going through what you had to go through as a patient that kind of brought to your attention what needed to be done for cancer rehab for everybody?
Absolutely. I started out in my 30s, and I felt really strong and healthy. And when I went through treatment, I got sicker and sicker. And when I was sicker than I had ever imagined, my oncologist said, okay, go home and try to heal and try to accept a new normal. And to me, that was really hard. I think to, you know, any cancer survivor, that's very difficult to hear, basically, that you started out in one place that you felt pretty good, and then the treatments, or maybe the cancer itself, made you very, very sick. And having help to get back to where you were, or in the case of prehab, maybe for some people they can even be better than they were at diagnosis. But at least to try to get as close as you can back to where you were. And I call that just having optimal health. Whatever, you know, we want to alleviate unnecessary suffering, because there's plenty of suffering already in cancer.
Yeah, you don't need to add more onto that. So what kind of rehab do you do? Because I'm sure there's a whole range depending on the person themselves and the cancer. How do you even evaluate it?
Well, in STAR programs that are located throughout the United States, what we do is we start at the very beginning. We start at diagnosis, and we want to make sure that these patients are evaluated for distress and also for physical problems right away so that we have a baseline. And then we want to offer them specific interventions that will help them before cancer treatment's even started. And we don't want to cause any delays because you want them to start right away. But a lot of patients have a built-in delay, whether it's scheduling their surgery or whatever it is. So we want to make sure that they have optimal treatment right at that point in time. And then as they go through treatment, if they develop problems, then we have a baseline to compare it to, and we know that these are new problems, or we know that they are progressive problems, and we treat them. So, you know, all throughout the care continuum, we're looking at these patients and making sure that we're identifying problems right away.
You know, it does seem that, you know, you were talking about the possibility of people being better than they were than when they first got the disease. So you do deal with people being able to stress management techniques and lifestyle changes. All of this is a part of it, isn't it?
It is part of it, but it's different than just general exercise and wellness. And the reason that it's different is, and you can probably think about it most easily in terms of a stroke survivor. So someone's had a stroke, and we wouldn't say, listen, you've had a stroke, you need to just exercise more and eat right and so on. Of course that's true, and that will help prevent another stroke, and that will be good for them overall. But first we would send them for rehab. First they would see a physical therapist and a speech-language pathologist and perhaps an occupational therapist and maybe a doctor like me, a physiatrist. But we wouldn't just say, you know, figure this out on your own or here's an exercise class. And so rehabilitation is different than general exercise and wellness recommendations. And because it's different, it is generally covered by health insurance.
That was actually going to be my next question. So the STAR program is largely covered by health insurance programs?
Yes. Health insurance generally covers rehabilitation no matter what the cause of the problem is. So if you're in a car accident or you have a stroke or you have cancer, rehabilitation services are typically covered.
How major a thing is the psychological changes? I know certainly a significant number of people will suffer depression when they get cancer. Is the psychological rehab a major part with many people as well?
Well, I think that we probably could say that most people will have some level of distress. They may not reach the threshold for clinical depression, but they will be distressed. It's very distressing to have a diagnosis of cancer. And, in fact, it would be a little bit strange if someone wasn't distressed because it's pretty tough to have that diagnosis.
Yeah, then you're not understanding here.
Right, exactly. There's a disconnect.
Yep.
So we would expect that, but we would want someone to be able to adjust. And also, we don't want them to worry about worrying. Instead, we want to give them specific strategies to help them relax, decrease stress, and so on. And those kinds of strategies, for example, they might be able to implement when they're going for surgery. So let's say somebody is waiting for surgery and they're literally in the pre-op room and they're having an IV started and so on. They might want to use meditation. They might want to use guided imagery or other techniques that will help them decrease their stress level.
Now, some of these are skills that people will carry with them for the rest of their lives, but generally, how long does the rehab period go?
Well, rehab usually is a set of visits. For example, with the physical therapist, it might be 6 visits or 10 visits or maybe a few more than that. It really depends on the problem. And then if there's a new problem or another issue comes up or this one progresses, there might be another set of visits. But the way rehabilitation medicine typically works is that there's a specific goal that you're trying to improve someone's range of motion or improve their strength or whatever it is that you're treating. And then there's a set number of visits for that. But you're right that the kinds of interventions can be used forever, and that's really helpful to survivors. The other thing that I probably should mention is that in this distress issue, that survivors tend to be less distressed if they're physically feeling better. The more they
sure
do and so on, the less distressed they are.
That's Dr. Julie Silver in conversation with Steve Wiseman. You want more information? Go to OncologyRehabPartners.com. OncologyRehabPartners.com. Steve Wiseman returns in just a moment to talk about identity theft of the dead. That's next when A Touch of Grey continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast and more conversation with Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is an expert on scams and frauds. His website is scamicide.com. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And now he has a new book coming out very shortly. We'll be telling you about it. It's called Identity Theft Alert, also published by Prentice Hall. Steve's here now to discuss identity theft, which is the number one consumer crime in America, identity theft of the dead. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, I talk a lot about identity theft, and in fact, my new book, Identity Theft Alert, has just come out. And, you know, we think that we're vulnerable to identity theft as children, we find out, and as adults, but now we're finding out we're even vulnerable to identity theft when we're dead. believe it or not, 2.5 million Americans, deceased Americans, were subjects of identity theft and victims of identity theft as credit cards were opened using their credit, loans, cell phone services, income tax returns were filed, and this can create a real problem for the estate. So how does this happen? Well, one of the ways it happens is that identity thieves will look at obituaries in the newspaper, and they'll find people's, they'll get the birth date. They'll get some other personal information, a name, an address. They'll take that. They'll then go online, where unfortunately you can still get access to people's social security numbers after they've passed away, and then they're off to the races. So it is a serious thing, but there are a number of things that you can do if you do have a death in your family. First of all, in the obituary itself, certainly you can list the age of the person, but don't put in the birth date. Certainly don't put in the person's mother's maiden name or other kind of identifying information that would be helpful to an identity thief. You also, by the way, may not want to put in the person's address because, believe it or not, some of these scummy criminals will actually rob a home during the funeral. But what you want to do to help protect yourself is you want to contact, get a copy of the death certificate, and contact all of the companies with which this person did business, such as credit card companies and others. Contact Social Security. Let them know as well. And finally, and most importantly, you want to contact the credit reporting agencies, and you want to have them lock the account saying that the person is deceased. If you do this, you're going to be able to help protect this person from identity theft and having that mess up the estate as you're trying to settle it.
Thank you, Steve. Important information. I will be looking forward to your new book coming out shortly, Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall. And check out Steve Wiseman's website, scamaside.com, as well as The Truth About Avoiding Scams, also published by Prentice Hall. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line, pulling it all together, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, and, of course, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, for all that you do for radio listeners across the country. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.